object that is manufactured in the free world. We not only have these sections, which have a half a dozen meetings apiece a year, but in addition, support symposia of one kind or another. For example, in January in Montreal, we had an ice-breaking symposium. The following month, a sailing yacht symposium in Annapolis. This was followed by our participation in the Offshore Technology Conference in Houston. This month, a propeller conference. Next month, a ship structure symposium, and so on. A half a dozen or so of these each year. We have 60 committees which are involved in research of one kind or another. Although this is a society of naval architects and marine engineers, there are only a few schools that give degrees in naval architecture and marine engineering, with the result that we incorporate every discipline of engineering you can think of. As you know, about 99% of the people that travel internationally across the oceans go by airplane, but likewise 99% of the material that comes to this country or leaves has to go by ship. This is our principal concern. Thank you.
I'm Arthur Stern, the president of the Air Pollution Control Association. Our executive vice president, Dr. Lewis Rogers, was unable to be here. He and our headquarters staff are located at the Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. We have about 6,500 members, engineers, chemists, physicists, meteorologists, physicians, lawyers, and social scientists. So we're a mixed group, including both the polluters and the abaters in the same organization. At our annual meeting, we have an attendance of about 4,000. We have 20 sections in the United States and Canada who hold sectional meetings. We also hold specialty meetings throughout the year. We're one of the founding members of the International Union of Air Pollution Prevention Associations, which holds quadrennial international meetings. The previous meetings were held in London, Washington, and Düsseldorf. The next meeting next year will be held in Tokyo. We have refrained for many years from getting into matters of public policy, but decided during the past year that it was time we did so. So for the first time, we've made some recommendations to the Congress on suggested revisions of the Clean Air Act.
Thank you. Note that he is Arthur C. and he is Arthur P. He's great. Very...
Morning. Satchel Paige once said, never look back. They may be gaining on you. I'm not going to look back this morning. I am Harry Lessig. I'm with ASQC. I'm the junior past chairman of the board of directors. We are having an executive committee meeting in Philadelphia, and quite obviously, I am the most expendable, so I am here. I've been attending the meetings of the Joint Society Forum and ACE for perhaps some 5 years now, and I found them always most informative. This one seems to be no exception. I have always noticed the great cooperation between the Society of Engineering Examiners and the National Society of Professional Engineers. Quite obviously, their areas of influence and expertise jive quite well. However, I learned this morning now another basis for their cooperation. NSPE's legal counsel is named Lunch, and the Society's of Engineering Examiners president-elect is named Munch. Now, certainly that has to go together. Additionally, in listening to Carolyn Phillips of the Society of Women Engineers, speaking of the great interest they're taking in cooperating with the other societies, speaking as an old Pennsylvania Dutch chauvinist male, I'm delighted to find the women cooperating. Speaking pretty much as a husband, too, I guess. And speaking as a husband, the president of the American Welding Society was said that he and his colleague were delighted to have their wives with them here this morning. I'm sure they are, and you should be delighted to have them with you anytime. Lovely ladies such as them are always welcome at our meetings here. I'm quite sure you've read with great fascination our report on page 9. We are a pretty much a society that's standard in nature. We have some 22,000 members. We, of course, are interested in the quality and reliability engineering methodologies. And if your company, or the company for whom you work, has not had a product recall program, blessed be assured that you are just one day closer to it every day. The Society Board of Directors has looked with pessimism upon membership for the coming year. I don't look at it that way. I think the engineering societies and the technical societies have no place to go but up. And certainly we as societies don't lack a product to sell. Mostly what we lack are salesmen. And if we go out and tell our story to the people who are engaged in our particular methodologies, I am sure there are any number of them who would be delighted to join with us and apply their expertise also. I said I wasn't going to look back, but by God, I did, and I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. I think that's a wonderful way to wrap up the session, and I want to thank each and every one of you. I wish that we had time now for general questions, but that really is going to get us out of order in our schedule. Now, you'll notice that we're going to have a coffee break, and the good news is that the coffee is here. There is some bad news, and that is that several of you have turned back luncheon tickets, I believe, or maybe even a dinner ticket. Unfortunately, we had to give a guarantee to the house, and so your society will be charged for those tickets regardless. You may wish to go back to Audrey and retrieve your tickets as a result of this announcement, but we really have no other way to handle the thing. Now, if you'd be very kind enough to return here in about 10 minutes, and Audrey tells me that you can bring your coffee cups back into this room, we would greatly appreciate it. Thank you all. We do have one more introduction to make, and I'm going to ask Joe Alford to make that introduction. Joe?
I'm pleased to introduce Mr. James C. Riley of Clarksville, Ohio, who is president of AIME this year.
Tim, would you stand up, please?
Good to be with you.
Thank you. You get no minutes of time. All right, now I think we can turn that red light off. And according to... Uh-oh. Now, according to the agenda, you'll notice that we are down to the point of election of officers. Before I turn this meeting over to someone else, let me call your attention to our rules of procedure. There will be one vote per member society, and that one vote can be cast by either the president or the official representative that he may have sent in the event he could not be here. So with that, I'm going to turn the meeting over to Harry Lessig, who is chairman of the nominating committee and who is going to run the elections.
I don't know whether many of you are familiar with the politics in the state of Illinois, but for someone to say that they are, who is from Springfield, the state capital, to say they're going to run the elections in the city of Chicago, that's a little much. Those of you who understand the connotations of that will know the humor of it. Except when you're a taxpayer, you know, you laugh right here. The nominating committee was made up of Ken Coulter, Bill Johnson, and Art Stern of IEEE. The committee labored mightily in selecting what they considered a viable candidate, slate of candidates, to lead ASE throughout the coming year. If I might pause just a moment from the business at hand and talk about communications, which was alluded to by the lady from the computer sciences industry, we have all had our problems with communications. As chairman of a nominating committee, you are amazed at the communication bottlenecks that occur. However, I am told that our difficulties were dwarfed by what happened in ancient Rome many, many years ago. At that particular time, there was a great community of members of the Jewish faith living in Rome, and the native Romans took exception to their living there. being more sensible than we are today, they decided to settle the question of the Jews being permitted to stay in Rome, to settle that question by debate. And the Roman community chose the most prestigious Roman of all to present the native Roman side. And when the Jewish community heard of that, nobody wanted to go up against the Pope. They finally prevailed upon Abe to represent the Jewish community. Abe had just been laid off from the General Chrysler division in Rome there. He was living with his brother-in-law, owned no property, so he had nothing to lose. So he agreed to represent the Jewish community. The entire population of Rome gathered in the amphitheater, and not having the IEEE in those days and its electronic communication methods, they decided, in order to be understood, that they would have to debate in pantomime. They started off, the Pope being the most prestigious, he led off, and the Pope went like this. It was A.B.'s turn. A.B. stood up, and he went like this. It was the Pope's turn again. Pope went like this. It was A.B.'s turn. A.B. went like that. Pope's turn again. He reached into his vestments, took out the sacraments, and touched them to his lips. A.B. stood up, put his hand in his pocket, took out an apple, took a bite out of it, and held it up. And the Pope says, "We give up. The Jews can stay in Rome." Now, the Pope went back to the College of Cardinals, and they want to know how come he gave up so easily. And he said, "Well, we were just totally out-argued." The Pope said, "I told the congregation, God is everywhere." A.B. said, "God is right here." I told the congregation that I represented the Holy Trinity. A.B. said, "There's only one God." I showed the congregation I could offer them the blessed sacraments. A.B. offered them sin and sex, and I was wiped out. Now, A.B. went back to the Council of Elders. They said, "A.B., how come you won?" He says, "I don't know. I had no good arguments." A.B. said, "The Pope said, the Jews must go." And I said, "The Jews are going to stay right here." Pope said, "There are three times as many Romans as there are Jews." I said, "One Jew is equal to three Romans." The Pope showed them what he was going to have for lunch, and I showed them what I was going to have. So you can see, communication is a difficult art or science, and it has been very opportunely said, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and I submit the meaning of the word is in the ear of the listener. We hope you will listen to the slate of candidates our committee has put forward. There was not a unanimity in the committee. There was one dissenting vote on each candidate, and one of those who dissented from the slate of officers as it is being presented asked that his viewpoint be pointed out to the group here. Art Stern felt that the nominee of the committee for chairman-elect should not be an educator, but should be one in the engineering profession itself. I would like to announce the nominations of the committee by the office for which the nominee is intended. Starting off, the committee is pleased to nominate Dr. Joseph J. Martin, past president of EJC. And at this time, the chair pro tempore will accept nominations from the floor or a motion to close the nominations for that position. What is your pleasure?
I second.
Yes, sir. Art Stern.
Do you plan to have a discussion on the procedures of the nominating committee, or did you essentially...
I can't quite hear you, Art.
Do you plan to have a discussion on the procedures used by the nominating committee, or have you essentially exhausted that subject?
The procedures of the nominating committee were pretty much the standard ones. Suggestions were solicited from all societies. suggestions were solicited from the nominating committee. The suggestions were collated and put out to the nominating committee for an expression of their opinion. And throughout several expressions, it came down to the nominee that the committee finally decided upon. If that is not the procedure which was used, I would be pleased to have a refutation from any member of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I rise to a point of order. There was a motion to close the nominations. I seconded it.
Thank you, George. The chair recognizes the motion, and may I point out that there was a small argument between 1941 and 1945 that got into all the papers that shot out most of the nerves in my ears. So if you'll speak up a little bit, well, I'm sure I can hear you. I did not hear it, and I apologize for not hearing. There is a motion which has been duly seconded on the floor to close the nominations. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary?
No.
So ordered. Motion carries. The committee's nomination for chairman-elect is Mr. Cornelius Wandemacher, the past president of the American Society of Engineering Educators. I will entertain either a motion to close the nominations or further nominations to that position. Yes, sir.
I would like to speak for that nomination.
There are a variety of ways that we can look upon ACE. We can consider it as a potentially rather important organization. We can consider it as just a debating club which gathers from time to time to have a reasonably good time and to talk about inconsequential matters. And you can have a whole spectrum abuse between these two extremes. When I talked before about the nominating procedures used, then I had the following in mind. If we want to have an active and effective ACE, which really speaks for engineering in this country, then we ought to be very careful in selecting the officers of ACE. We ought to give people an opportunity to express their views on the important problems faced by engineering these days. And upon hearing their views, we ought to make up our minds whether the candidates are indeed proper candidates or not. Now, my problem with this nomination is that even though I'm a member of the nominating committee, I was informed of this nomination the day before yesterday morning by telephone. I was informed that the original candidate, for one reason or other, no doubt good reason, did not accept his candidacy and is unable to serve, and that a new candidate is now advanced, and what are my views on that subject? And I indicated to the chairman of the nominating committee that I considered that kind of nominating process a farce. We do not know about the views of the nominee. We do not know what he stands for. We know that he belongs to the academic community, but we also know that at least in our society, there is grave reservation with regard to part of the academic community, namely those who advocate an unlimited increase in the number of engineering students to be recruited and the number of engineers to be added to the engineering population of this country. We do not know how the candidate feels about this subject. We do not know how the candidate feels about any other subject. And 2 days prior to the election, I'm being called to give a rubber stamp to a procedure which I just simply don't understand. Now, it seems to me that in a respectable environment, nominations ought to be conducted in the following fashion. First of all, rather than wasting months on nominating candidates who ultimately will not accept, we ought to get the response of a candidate ahead of time, whether he will accept or not. And we ought to get his expression and views on the most important subject faced by the profession these days. This has not been done. Nothing has been distributed about any of the candidates and about their views. And as I say, this particular candidate was presented to me 2 days ago, incidentally in the middle of a meeting, in which I sat and I was called to the phone to make a decision on that subject. Ladies and gentlemen, the quality and the effectiveness of the leadership that you're going to get is going to depend on the amount of effort that you are putting into their selection. You get what you work for. In this case, I just cannot see how we could go along with the kind of process that has been used and the method by which the candidate was selected. Now, I fully realize that I will be leaving this spot, and the chairman of the nominating committee will be able to respond, and I'm not going to respond anymore to this. However, what I told you is the truth, the regrettable truth.
Bill?
I'd like to just get a little clarification. I was a member of this nominating committee, and you people just don't know the number of times we have been on the telephone all over this country discussing likely candidates, and we did poll many, many, many of the engineering, and we had discussion after discussion. So for any kind of alluding that this is something, is a rubber stamp kind of thing, in this particular case, Harry can explain the change, but I assure you that this did not lightly happen, and my Rocketdyne telephone bill along with Harry's is a monster if you think that we have not done our job.
If I might just add a word of elucidation to that, to Bill's comment regarding the perhaps stewardship of the nominating committee. When we wrote to the societies and asked for suggestions for the nomination of a person for chairman-elect of ACE, the names of Dick Robertson, Klaus Timmerhaus, Cornelius Wanmacher, and Harry E. Beauvais were submitted by the member societies of ACE. There was an additional nomination. Mr. Stern called me and placed his own name in nomination for chairman-elect, which we were very pleased to have. The committee finally decided on a 3-1 vote that Cornelius Wanmacher was their choice for nominee for the position of chairman-elect. And this was done after one of the other candidates expressed extreme regret that he would not be able to handle the particular job. That is the way Cornelius Wanmacher came to be nominated. It's unfortunate that this particular time of the year, when we are trying to get a slate of officers together, everybody is in Timbuktu or Atlantic City on vacation. And the telephone bill is considerable, but if we come up with a good elected slate of officers, it will be worthwhile. Then may I again emphasize that the name of Cornelius Wanmacher was not a stranger to the nominating committee. It was one of the original candidates. Yes, Art.
I'm, of course, not privy to the discussions that have taken place between other members of the committee, but I should like to point out that the total telephone bill and the conversations in which I might have been involved, either initiated by me or by Mr. Lessing, undoubtedly is less than $10. As a matter of fact, I would be willing to bet that it's less than $5, because I have not participated in any extensive conversations. And incidentally, I did not place my name in nomination. I did not call Mr. Lessing to place my name in nomination, but in the course of the only conversation that we had prior to the conversation of this last Monday, I indicated that I might be interested in considering it. And subsequently, I indicated that I had no objection against Mr. Robertson, who I felt was highly qualified for the position. I do not deny, of course, that conversations might have taken place between Mr. Lessing and other members of the committee, which may have taken hours. All I know is that I am not participating.
Fine. I think we have heard the statements of those who care to make it on this. The chair will recognize further nominations or a motion to close the nomination. Yes, sir.
I am somewhat concerned. I really don't know the gentleman involved. I am concerned, as Mr. Stern said, though, that the president of ACE represent a large vertical section of engineering. I'm somewhat concerned that the president should represent the academic strata. This bothers me to a degree. As a result, I'd like to officially put Mr. Stern's name up for nomination.
It has. Art Stern IEEE has been nominated. Is there a second from one of the society representatives?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Are there further nominations?
Move that be closed.
It has been moved that the nominations be closed. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
It has been moved and seconded. Are we ready for the question? The question has been called. All in favor of closing the nominations for chairman-elect say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? So ordered. If I might take just the liberty of making a comment relative to who represents whom, I would feel very badly if I were an elected officer of ACE to think that I represented my society, my particular methodology, or my particular segment of the engineering community. I think the officers of this organization should be elected who will represent the engineering community, period, and ACE in particular. The nominating committee has nominated for Secretary Treasurer Mr. John P. Houston, the past president of the American Institute of Industrial Engineers. The chair will accept further nominations or will recognize a motion to close the nominations for that position. It has been moved that the nominations be closed. Is there a second to the motion? It has been moved and seconded. Are we ready for the question? All in favor of closing the nominations for Secretary Treasurer, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? So ordered. I have here ballots for the election, and I presume it will be in order now to have them distributed, and if I can pick the two closest people, would you distribute them to the voting representatives of the societies of ACE? There is a line under each name to write in. The chair will rule that only a write-in of Mr. Art Stern of IEEE will be appropriate under chairman-elect.
Be appropriate, just to be sure, in view of the many guests and who are present, who is voting? The presidents or the delegates of the presidents of the following organizations are members of ACE and entitled to vote. Air pollution.
Yeah. As you call the society, would they hold it up, and will those who distributed the ballots also collect those and bring them up here to the table as they hold their hands up?
Air Pollution Control Association.
Wait a minute. You want them to be marked and me to pick them up?
Pardon?
You want them to be marked first?
It doesn't make any difference.
Well, you better wait until they have a chance to mark them.
Okay.
Mark it, and then we'll pick them up after they're marked.
Very good.
Nobody will know who's voting what way because there'll be one pile. Air Pollution Control Association, American Consulting Engineers Council, American Institute of Astronautics and Aeronautics, American Institute of Chemical Engineers, American Institute of Industrial Engineers.
Over here.
American Institute of Mining, Metallurgical, and Petroleum Engineers. American Society for Engineering Education, American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers, American Society for Quality Control. Harry? American Society of Agricultural Engineers. American Society of Civil Engineers. American Society of Mechanical Engineers. American Society of Safety Engineers. Engineers Council for Professional Development. Engineers Joint Council. Federation of Material Societies. Illuminating Engineering Society. Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. Institute of Traffic Engineers. National Council of Engineering Examiners. National Institute of Ceramic Engineers. National Society of Professional Engineers. Society of American Military Engineers. Back there. Society of Automotive Engineers. Society of Fire Protection Engineers. Society of Manufacturing Engineers. Society of Women Engineers. Those are the 27 member societies and organizations of ACE.
Thank you, Dan. I think it was an excellent suggestion. At this point in time, I'd like to call a recess to recess the election portion and turn the meeting back to our General Chairman, Joe.
Harry, I'm going to appoint Harry as chief teller, and possibly you can work with one of the girls here to count the ballots, Harry. And as soon as you have a count, report back to us. And this way, we can then proceed with the last part of our meeting. And at this time, I'd like to have Ken Davis and Fred Bagby come up here to the head table. Now, we're going to call on Ken first, so you don't even get a chance to sit down, Ken. If you just come over here, we're going to keep the green light on, even though we are somewhat behind because of the problems that we have had in the last 15 or 20 minutes. But what we would like to do is to hear a review of the activities of the two committees that we have on deck. So, Ken, we'll let you proceed.
Thank you, Joe. I'd like to start by just reminding you again of the basic scope of the Coordinating Committee on Energy, which I think we discussed at the last meeting, but which I think would give you a picture of what we're trying to do. And this charter, which we have from the group here, in fact, really does limit us to coordination, and that, of course, is our name. But the kinds of things we're trying to do might be put under the following headings, such as exchanging information on energy activities of the various participating societies, arranging for one or more participating societies to furnish information which might be requested by government agencies. We were chartered to examine the potential for expanded efforts in energy by one or more of the participating societies. And we're also asked to suggest to the participating societies their individual support of joint action, which presumably is two or more of them, and such things as endorsing policy statements, presentations or comments on legislative issues involving energy, possible initiation of studies by the participating societies, or perhaps the creation of other committees or task forces to carry out specific jobs. Now, the limitations which we have on ourselves as a coordinating committee, the first one is quite important. We don't have any money. Secondly, all matters are referred to the participating societies for their action. and we're not supposed to take any action in the name of the Coordinating Committee on Energy or of ACE. Now, that is sort of a background of the situation. I would like to tell you a bit about what we've done. And I think I would like to preface that by saying that we've had, I think, an enthusiastic and active committee, and I think that we all have a feeling that the energy situation in this country is really quite critical, and that everyone, including the professional engineering societies, has got to help make that evident and has got to help in trying to solve that situation, which is rather rapidly getting worse, as best any of us can tell. Now, at the present time, we have about 20 societies who have representation on the committee or who have specific official contacts. One of the societies has officially withdrawn. At the same time, we would like to invite others who want to participate to get in touch with us and simply attend and participate in our meetings. Probably the most important thing I think we have done in the past several months is we did prepare a letter to President Ford suggesting that the professional engineering societies have rather unusual qualifications and could be of assistance in the energy crisis, and further suggested that one way which might help to bring this to the attention of the public and the Congress would be a White House conference on energy. This letter was signed by 17 of the presidents and was sent to the President of the United States on May 12th, and as well to some of the congressional leaders and others in the executive branch. We recently received a reply from Secretary of Commerce Morton suggesting a meeting to explore this further with the Assistant Secretary of Commerce, Betsy Anker Johnson, and Morton's Special Assistant for Energy, Sam Tuthill. Because of various conflicts and vacations of a number of people, myself included, while we were unable to arrange a meeting, although we've had several conversations with Betsy's office. But we certainly are going to pursue this. Another thing was referred to, I think, by Art Stern, which was that we suggested that the various societies support or endorse the IEEE resolution on the California nuclear moratorium. And several have done so, and unfortunately I've been out of the office, so I don't know how many actually did, but I know this was reported on at the IEEE meeting in San Francisco about 2 weeks ago. I believe there were five or six who had done so, and I'm just not up to date on the final number. This moratorium election, for your information, is on June 6th of 1976, and a poll, which is now a bit old, it was taken some months ago, showed an interesting dilemma in that 69% of the people polled said they were in favor of nuclear power, and 73% said they thought that Nader was the most credible individual in the United States. We're not quite sure what that means, but we'll find out. This is a serious issue, and it is an issue which is coming up in other states as well, and I think it's one that the engineering societies ought to examine fairly carefully and, where they feel it appropriate, take some real action. In addition, the Coordinating Committee has reviewed the subjects and priorities for a planned series of so-called state-of-the-art papers by the Electric Power Research Institute. These are things dealing with the present status and prospects of solar energy, geothermal, fusion, and things of this sort. We massaged their list quite thoroughly, and they then submitted to us at our last meeting another list, which I think will be quite useful. We have received a number of statements and discussed them at our meetings that the various societies have planned to present to Congress or to other agencies, and simply have commented on them, and they have then been issued by the parent organization. We have also done some reviewing of what the various societies have been doing, and I think this has been very useful. We exchanged some reports and things of that sort. One thing I think may be of future interest is that, as I reported, I think, at the last meeting, the Coordinating Committee did send out to all of the members of Congress and something over 100 people in the administration, as well as some of the state people, copies of the National Academy of Engineering report on U.S. energy prospects. We have had a continuing, and I think a good reaction to that. The thing I wanted to mention is that the academies, through the National Research Council, are now planning a large study on energy, which I think will become of great interest to all of the engineering societies. This will be something of a follow-on from the earlier National Academy report, which simply said what it appeared possible to do. Now the desire is to explore this somewhat more thoroughly with respect to what the consequences would be. One other item is that we have been requested by the U.S. National Committee of UPADE, which is the Pan-American Federation of Engineering Societies, to supply a chairman for the Energy Committee of UPADE itself, and we are looking into this and feel that perhaps some of our members might also be good members of this Pan-American Energy Committee. Our last meeting was on May 13th in Washington, D.C., and our next one is planned for the 10th of September in Washington, D.C., and I would certainly urge all of the societies who are interested to plan to have someone there. I think we do feel this is an important area. I think it's been mentioned several times this morning, the increasing interest in energy by the societies, and we hope that we can make use of the coordinating committee to try to pull that together and make the effort of the individual societies collectively much more effective. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much, Ken. Are you open for a couple of questions? Anybody that would care to interrogate Ken on anything that he has reported here? Hearing, all right, Hal?
I understand informally that there's some plans underway to have brief report from the Energy Coordinating Committee back to the various societies so that the membership at large of the societies can be aware of your Coordinating Committee activity. Could you explain that a little bit more?
We've talked about it. We don't have a plan so far. I see Dick, who's on our committee, wants to say something.
What I had mentioned informally was the idea that we had talked about of getting some of our information back into the societies.
Yeah, we don't have any concrete plan as yet. I think it's probably something we should do. One of the problems that I mentioned early on is a little limitation, which is no money. And that presumably was to confine our activities to the kinds of things a coordinating committee should do. But we might wrestle up a little bit of money and try to do that.
Any other questions? Now, independently of Ken's report, we duplicated some material from Chemical Engineering Progress through the kindness of AICHE and from Nuclear News through the kindness of ANS, and we're going to have that material passed out right now. I would hope that you put off reading it. There's a lot of extremely interesting things in there with reference to some of the things that Ken said. And then maybe later in the day, if we have time, we could bring up a little discussion of some of that. So I will ask that you can take that material down the aisles now. And now we don't have enough for every person. We believe we have enough, about two per society. If your society can get along with one, why, that will help us out a little bit. We'll see how it works out. Now, before we turn to Fred Bagby, I'm going to ask Harry Lessig to take the mic and, as teller, announce the results of the election.
You know, I think a sign of maturity, whether it's in or no matter what ethnic concern it happens to be, is the ability to laugh at yourself. I think when we learn to laugh at ourselves as Germans or Irish or whatever it happens to be, we maintain a sort of mental balance that's to be desired. I've often heard it said that you can always tell an engineer, but not very much. I think this election has been discussed, and perhaps healthily so. There has been a consensus reached on the election of officers. There were 27 societies voting. For chairman, Dr. Joseph J. Martin, 25 votes.
there were two abstentions. For chairman-elect, there was one abstention. There were 16 for Cornelius Wanmacher and 10 for Art Stern. For secretary-treasurer, there were 25 votes for John Houston and two abstentions. That is the results. The ballots are here. I would think, however, that the Teller's committee be given a vote to authorizing them to destroy the ballots or discard them, or anyone who wants to examine them, fine. But I think we should make a disposition of that and acceptance of the Teller's report, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you very much. We'll entertain a motion to accept the Teller's report and also to dispose of the ballots. All right, it's been moved. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, then the election is duly approved. I think we also should thank Harry Lessig and the Nominations Committee for the work that they have done. Well, I'm very happy that you used that word education. Believe me, I am very sensitive to some of the discussion which was carried on during the election. I think that it was quite in order, and I can only say that I will do all in my part in whatever way I can to keep as broad a viewpoint of the profession as possible. Now, I know that many of you say that that may be a bit difficult for one who is in academia, and it is, but after all, our students go to work, even though we may not. And I think that we do have many, many ties with you folks who are in industry, and I can only say that in view of Art Stern's comments that this definitely should be factored in the future operations of ACE, and that I would hope that such a consideration might be discussed at the appropriate time next year. All right, without further comment on the election, I'd like to have Fred Bagby take over and tell us about the Legislative Committee.
Thank you, Joe. I also, last February 17th in New York City, gave a presentation on the background and activities up to that point in time of the Congressional Liaison Task Force, and the details are contained in Appendix C of the minutes of that meeting. At that point in time, I emphasized our concern in four major areas and made a recommendation that ACE consider the organization of specific task force to deal with these issues. And they were science and technology policy, manpower policy and planning, mineral resources. Of course, at that time, energy was already separately organized, and we were aware of this, and codes and standards. I also pointed out that there are already a great number of activities in being, like the EJC Technology Assessment Panel, and similar types of informal engineering organizations involving more than one society that were active in interacting with the Congress in one way or another, and that we recommended that that the ACE members be aware of these kinds of things, and if they want to participate in those kinds of ongoing activities, that they should make their desires known. And under the concepts of ACE, as we are organized and operating today, I'm quite sure most of those kinds of groups will welcome any additional participation. A number of things have happened since my February 17th report. I'll try to highlight one or two. One in particular in some detail, because I think it's pretty fundamental to the overall interests of all of us. We talked about science and technology policy, and in the 94th Congress, Senate Bill S-32 was reintroduced, and a bill, House Resolution 4461, was introduced by Teague and Mosher in the House. Now, the two were not parallel bills. Now, those of us on the committee felt that S-32 came a little bit closer to fitting the real needs of a, you know, White House and executive branch level policy mechanism. H.R. 4461 seemed to have a little bit of everybody's wish list into it. The TEAC committee held hearings, public hearings, on H.R. 4461, and through the efforts of Ralph Clark of the IEEE Washington staff, and one who's been helping us on the task force very greatly, a written document expressing the opinions of a number of the presidents of ACE members was submitted to the Teague Committee. We did not have any verbal presentation. In the interim since then, I think most of you are aware, President Ford, through Vice President Rockefeller's study task group, in effect submitted his own plan for a White House science and technology policy advisory apparatus. So two new House resolutions were introduced. One was a House resolution following along the specifics of the Ford-Rockefeller request. And the second was a sort of a combination, as we understand it, of the efforts of the TEAC committee integrating both the features in the Ford-Rockefeller plan in H.R. 4461 and S-32 that in the judgment of the committee and taking into account the advisory inputs that they got during their hearings that represented, in their judgment, the best amalgamation of all these different ideas. Now, that particular resolution is just recently off the press. It's so recently that the House resolution number on my copy, and I just got a copy this morning, is written in hand, and it's House Resolution 9058. We've tried, and I don't know whether Ralph knows, we do have a number of copies of this through the efforts of Ralph Clark available, and we'll distribute them. Again, I don't know whether we have enough for everybody, but at least for every society, and I strongly recommend that, you know, every representative of his society here take a look at this new bill, because as the picture and the way we see things is are going to happen is there will be no further House hearings, that we expect, in effect, House passage of this resolution, H.R. 9058, sometime late in September. If ACE is to make any contribution or input into the House action on this, we'll have to do it in writing. And the ACE Congressional Task Force is assuming that responsibility, and we'll be looking at it. And if you have any inputs, you can either contact me or contact Ralph Clark in the IEEE Washington office, and we'll be very glad to get your inputs. And somewhere along the line, the task force will try to make a decision as to whether, you know, there are further inputs that are necessary or required from the point of view of engineering, or whether, in effect, this particular bill, you know, is adequate for science and technology policy as we see it. Now, one of my personal concerns is the fact that I don't feel the engineering community has ever organized itself, and that's one of the things we wanted to try to do earlier this year, you know, to have a debate on the pros and cons of science and technology policy. Our scientific friends do a lot better job of getting their names in print and getting their ideas across than we do as engineers, and that's, of course, one of the objectives of our Congressional Alliance and Task Force. This particular bill has four titles. One is National Science Policy, and most of the things look pretty reasonable and rational to me. It's, you know, sort of motherhood and sin type of items. Title II deals with the creation of an Office of Science and Technology Policy, and it allows the president to appoint a director and up to four assistant directors if he wishes. Some of the ideas called not for a you know, single director of a science policy or technology policy office, but a council, S-32, for example. And one can argue the pros and cons of what better. The kind of flexibility that's built into this bill really allows it to, you know, be adjusted in accordance with the desires of a particular president and his particular appointee. Title III is called the Federal Science and Technology Survey Committee, and that's an area which we haven't really had time enough to study, but from a quick look at it this morning, it sort of creates a parallel organization to the White House staff, which is kind of re-evaluating and looking over the shoulder of this committee. And I guess, one thing we need to do is think about that a little bit, all of us, and ask ourselves, is that really an effective and constructive way to get the kind of inputs you need, or is this going to just weaken and, kind of undermine the status or the strength of the presidential group? I'm not quite sure. Title four is just miscellaneous. Okay, Senators Kennedy, Toomey, and Moss have been cooperating, and in effect, they were the ones that put S-32 and reintroduced it into the Senate earlier this year. They planned joint Senate hearings, not three separate series, but one set of joint Senate hearings. As far as we can see, this will occur probably sometime in October. So as far as Senate action on this kind of a policy issue, there's time for ACE and all engineering organizations, collectively or independently, to make inputs into the proceedings. Again, we've decided that the time is caught up with us so that the task force itself is going to continue to serve as the focus for at least those interested in ACE wanting to work collectively in making an input into the Senate part of the problem. As I say, I think probably of all of the legislation, this particular issue is the one that has the greatest long-term impact on where science and technology are going in this country. And it's an opportunity for the engineering profession collectively, at least, to make itself heard more effectively. So we welcome your thoughts and suggestions as the next few weeks go by. In the area of engineering manpower planning and policy, there is some provision in this new issue for these groups to deal with that. It's not very clearly defined, as near as I can tell. As I said, I have not studied it in great depth yet. What we find in our committee activity, of course, is that the engineering community itself is very widely diversified in its ideas and opinions about engineering manpower policy. There are some people in our family that want rather specific, directed, detailed legislation. There are others who want no legislation in this area. Now, there's a great deal of concern, and I'm sure everybody in this room shares a basic feeling that there's no way that any single bureaucracy in Washington is going to mastermind the supply and demand of engineering manpower. And yet there are some people who would kind of like us to go, in that direction. I think, on the other hand, it's obvious to everybody who's lived very closely to the engineering employment situation in the last few years that there's something missing in the government policy-making mechanism when major policy decisions of a science and technology nature or relating to programs that have a substantive science and technology element in it, that the manpower aspect of these issues has never really been properly taken into account. So here again, I recommended in February that either ACE create a special manpower policy group or that it work with the Engineering Manpower Commission of EJC and broaden the charter of that group to set up a dialogue and get at what really does, is there a consensus? Now, you will hear a report tomorrow of the results of an engineering manpower conference at Henniker. I didn't happen to personally be there, and I have not seen the specific outputs of that yet, and it may be that some of the things you'll hear tomorrow will be a partial step towards what I'm talking about. In the area of minerals resources, we put that a little bit lower priority, but it's obvious that that's an area where engineers should be making an input into government policy. The Federation of Materials Science Societies has some programs going on that are relevant to this subject. So your Congressional Liaison Group decided that we had to learn more about what FMS was doing before we made any, you know, more positive recommendation that either something separate be done or that we all become a party, maybe what FMS is doing to pursue that particular subject. Finally, in the area of codes and standards, you heard really this morning, there's a great number of members of this organization who have traditionally for years been involved in the creation of either official or unofficial forms of codes and standards. But when you look at the consumerism movement, the health and the safety movements in this country and the consequential legislation that's come about, you know, we find that congressional and executive branch organizations oftentimes are required to create rather, you know, powerful and far-reaching kinds of standards, often with it, you know, not within the time and span and the kinds of debate that usually take place when we create voluntary standards. And there are many in this room that are a lot more experienced than I in this whole question of voluntary standards. But all things considered, over the years, the voluntary standard system has served us pretty well. And we're concerned that the engineering profession as a whole ought to collectively try to get and become more focused on this issue. We think that's an area for a separate ACE activity, apart from just what the Congressional Liaison Task Group itself does. I'll wrap things up by mentioning that there's you know, a whole lot of things of an engineering nature that go on in Washington. A lot of them are best dealt with, and I talked to this point in February, by individual societies. That in, you know, the technical content or the orientation of a particular piece of legislation is such that it's far better handled by an individual society pursuing it, since it fits the expertise and the concern of that society. And what we're looking for mostly in the Congressional Liaison Task Force are those kinds of things which we think, you know, the engineering profession as a whole ought to deal with collectively as a whole. ASME and IEEE, for example, put out documents that list all of the legislation of interest to engineers. NSPE does much the same thing. I suspect just about every society here, one way or another, has its own list of legislative items that it's concerned with. And we as a task force try to keep up with this to the degree possible. We make no pretense that, you know, we have intimate knowledge of every aspect of what's going on between individual engineering organizations and the legislative process in Washington, but we're trying as best we can to stay on top of that. And a very key element of that, and I can't overemphasize this, are the Washington representatives of the different societies. They've been absolutely invaluable in the efforts of our task force in trying to get anything done. Well, three things came up in our meeting the other day. An item, can ACE be a mechanism to encourage engineers to run for political office? You know, there's a lot of recognition of the fact that our Congress really, you know, isn't a representative cross-section of our society. There are almost no engineers or people of scientific background. And we'll be thinking about this, but I think it's a point everybody's aware of. I think most of you recognize your membership want more things done at the political level in Washington, but one of the better ways of doing this maybe is getting some engineers actually elected. There are some proposals for new federal lobbying laws which indirectly can affect what we as engineering societies or collectively at ACE might do, particularly in terms of record keeping. The Chamber of Commerce is following this very closely, and we have not decided whether we should do anything more and just support, say, what they're doing. There's a bill on the elimination of a $200 deduction for society dues and fees. And IEEE has already taken the lead with help from about 12 other societies to pursue this particular subject. Question came up, the administration is trying to entice top-level people into government, fill key jobs in IRDA and some of the other organizations. What is the role as an organization like ACE could play in this kind of function? Well, that's sort of what's happened since I talked with you last time, and I think I'll just wrap it up with that.
Thank you. All right, thanks, Fred. Are there any questions that you would like to put to Fred? Obviously, some of these matters are going to be covered later in the meeting. Ralph?
Well, I just wanted to mention that we were able to get hold of 18 copies of this draft, which is all we have. The committee promised me that if they got copies on Monday, they'd send 64 copies out to me, and apparently they didn't come in this morning. We might have them tomorrow morning.
Could we have them write you for a copy if they're not lucky enough to get one of the 18?
If the people who really want to get involved in the study of this bill would take a copy, then others who may not have time to do anything with it right away wait until we get some more.
All right. Comments, Bob?
Pass them out.
Whom do we write?
All right. You write to Ralph Clark. You want to give your address, Ralph?
Ralph Clark, IEEE, 2029 K Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 0006.
All right, Bob.
I just want to mention very quickly for the benefit of those that are here, tomorrow morning's session, which is the joint meeting of ACE with the Committee on Scientific Society Presidents, wanted to alert the group that the session organized by Chairman Gilmont of the CSSP and myself, we will have Glenn Schlady, the Associate Director of the Domestic Council from the Executive Branch, speaking to us on this matter of science, engineering, and technology policy and the administration viewpoint, and he will answer questions, and this will give you an opportunity to speak to the executive branch of the government in this affair. He incidentally will be arriving this afternoon and will be here this afternoon, this evening, and tomorrow.
All right, very good, Bob. Thank you. Was there another comment over here? Now, it's getting late. There were two items of other business that we wish to cover, and one of them could be controversial. We know what that is. And so, therefore, I'm simply going to take one of them at this time. The first organizational meeting of ACE was held February 17th, and all of the member societies got a copy of the minutes, but these minutes have not been officially approved. Since you did get copies and have had, 4 or 5 months to look at these, I'm simply going to ask for a motion for their approval. These are the minutes of the meeting of February 17, 1975, held at the Engineers Club in New York. May we have such a motion for approval of the minutes? All right. It's been moved and seconded that these minutes be approved. All the voting members, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the motion is carried. As I say, there is another item of business, but I'm going to put that off until after the luncheon. I believe we are convening right across the hall. There is a cash bar, and then shortly thereafter, the luncheon will be set up. Thank you very much. Right, is there a question?
Can we leave our briefcase here?
Yes, I think you can leave everything just as it is.